Part 1. Pedaling a homemade adult-sized tricycle with a frame made of white plastic plumbing pipes and fittings, a middle-aged tomboyish woman, Thule, approached a traffic light in a small town. With all her worldly belongings in a knapsack carried on her back, in a bin bolted between the rear wheels of her trike, she came to a stop at the intersection, where she tightened her purple helmet, then rubbed palms on green slacks. Waiting alone when the walk sign flashed, Thule plopped sneakers on pedals and looked both ways before entering the crosswalk. A moment later, though, a blaring horn, squealing tires, and a driver screaming, "Idiot!" startled Thule. Temporarily frozen, Thule looked through the passenger's window of the car swerving around her in time to see a raging 30-ish woman behind the steering wheel. Shaken by the close call, Thule scooted to the sidewalk ahead of her, then calmed herself with a few deep breaths. Rather than find fault with the driver, who had run a red light, two teenage girls, passing on foot, made fun of Thule.
"I guess growing up isn't for everybody," teased one of the girls. "Looking for the nearest loony bin?" taunted the other teen, prompting both girls to giggle.
Long realizing her trike was, for many, a source of ridicule, Thule ignored the teens, intent on making her way to the town's lone rooming house. She continued on her way. After arriving at her next temporary home, Thule found the mustard-colored rooming house in disrepair. Taking a few moments to scan the property, she noticed an assortment of birdhouses perched on poles and hanging from tree limbs. Lacking any semblance of symmetry, each of the lopsided bird sanctuaries had been built by piecing together a mishmash of scrap wood. Further distinguishing one from another, each had been painted a different shade of red, blue, or green. Soon gliding down the front walkway and past a faded sign, "Birdie's Haven Rooms for Rent," Thule pushed her trike on the grass and headed for the front steps of the run-down two-story home. Once through the doorway, she noticed several birdhouses for sale on the counter between her and an elderly gentleman.
"Hello, sir," greeted Thule. The man stepped toward the counter.
"I'm Birdie, the has-been fella whose nickname came from having a fondness for birds. I own and run the Haven. Rooms are $15 a day, and birdhouses are $3 a piece."
"My name is Thule, a nickname that came from having a fondness for fixing things with run-of-the-mill hand tools. I'll take a room by the day, and I'll mention your birdhouses at my work stops. Do you ever make squirrel dens?" she asked.
"No need to. The pesky critters bunk in my attic," said Birdie.
"Squirrels like to nestle in cozy places. The tree dens would compliment your generosity," noted Thule.
Birdie was baffled.
"What generosity you talking about?" he asked. "During the quick look I had at your property, I spotted some big oaks, which tells me you're providing nuts for nearby wildlife. Of course, That's assuming money problems haven't required a shake-up in your diet, kidded Thule with a grin. Birdie chuckled. I've had long stretches of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, but things ain't come to acorn stew, he assured.
Then building homes for squirrels would be another way for you to see yourself be kind, suggested Thule.
I suppose so, droned the hunched elder before sliding Thule a registration form. Gal's bunk on the first floor. You're in room 2. Do you have a vehicle? It's out front, answered Thule as she put cash on the counter, then began to fill out the form she'd been given. After peering out a window and not seeing a car or truck, Bertie scratched his head. You said your vehicle was out front.
Yes, assured Thule. All I see is a big 3-wheeler, said Bertie.
Expecting to be mocked, Thule dropped shoulders and exhaled.
That's my mode of transportation, she answered. Do you mind if I ask where you're roving from? Asked Bertie, curious rather than critical.
Cloddardville, answered Thule.
That's 8 miles east, said Bertie, squinting puzzlement.
To avoid traffic, I used Route 71, noted Thule.
That's an unused road, all right, but it adds a couple of hilly miles, pointed out Bertie.
Counting rest stops, it was about a 7-hour trip, detailed Thule.
You must stick your feet out when you glide downhill, commented Bertie.
Unlike a 2-wheeler, gliding on a trike is dicey. When it gets steep, I climb off and walk, explained Thule.
Bertie was impressed. I bet you got no flat, solid tires, he noted.
No tubes, belts, chains, or gadgets of any kind.
I'm guessing you appreciate sticking with what's simple, said Thule.
The vehicles on the roads these days are fancy doohickey death traps, as far as I can see. Knowing there's somebody not chasing the crowd is uplifting.
That's saying a lot, given how miserable I've been, shared Bertie with a sigh.
Thanks for the compliment. Sorry you've been feeling down, replied Thule.
Park your trike behind the garage, said Bertie.
Need any repairing, cleaning, or raking done? I work for whatever folks decide is within their means, offered Thule.
Got a wrecking ball in your trike's chest? I'm afraid this place is beyond repairing. To boot, I'm in one of those peanut butter and jelly sandwich stretches I fessed up to, shared Bertie.
Maybe you know someone who needs cheap help, asked Thule as she handed Bertie the completed form.
My shirker of a son flew the coop and left his ex with a big mortgage on a ramshackle small place. Her name is Helen. She's at 9 Gotch Road, second left, heading west. Don't tell her I sent you. She's rightly upset about me being unable to get my son to pay child support like he's supposed to, said a regretful Bertie.
Feeling sympathetic, Thule looked down.
Helen's retaliating by having my granddaughter, Key, steer clear of me. It's been close to a year
since I've seen Key, shared Bertie with moistening eyes. We had some good times building birdhouses while listening to the radio music she likes. I ain't touched a piece of scrap wood since she stopped coming, he grieved while wiping wet cheeks with a sleeve. If I get the chance, I'll let Key know you miss her. I bet you and her would make some dandy squirrel dens, suggested Tuli. You sure got a yearning to see those dens get made, said Bernie. Traveling the way I do puts roadkill up close. I'd like to see squirrels catch a break for a change. Could I bother you for the time? Asked Tuli, noticing a chain drooping from the pocket of the elder's vest. Bertie pulled out his pocket watch and clutched its circular metal casing without popping the cover. Sorry, my watch stopped working, he replied, with eyes again watering. I carry it around 'cause Key gave it to me on a past birthday. I'd say it's around 3. Soon ringing the daughter-in-law's bell, Tuli stepped back when the door opened.
How can I help you?
Curtly asked Helen, keeping her hand on the doorknob as she glanced skeptically at the large tricycle. Tuli spoke timidly.
I do odd jobs. Though my mode of transportation isn't typical, it lugs all that's usually needed to make routine home repairs. My name is Tuli. Thanks for hearing me out.
Are you going door to door?
Asked Helen. Not yet. I was given your name by someone I just met. Someone who thought it best if he remained anonymous, answered Tuli.
Helen folded arms while squinting concern.
Does knowing I just rented a room on Ramper Street help?
Offered Tuli.
The useless father of my useless ex-husband sent you,
quickly realized Helen.
Do you want me to leave? Asked Tuli.
Badly needing work done, Helen gruffly sought more information.
I've had some slimeball thieves do repairs. What's your hourly rate? My rate is whatever you decide you can afford, assured Tuli.
Still suspicious, Helen again made known she was familiar with being scammed.
When it rains, water drips into a pan I keep on the fireplace mantle. Each of the 2 estimates I received from guys who never got on the roof were about $4,500. When I told them that sounds like a whole new roof, they grinned, then told me they were too busy to bother with makeshift jobs. Bottom line is, I'll struggle to come up with $45,
complained Helen.
If the problem is what I think it might be, an inexpensive tube of patching tar and not more than an hour of my time should do the trick. Do I have your permission to get on the roof somehow so that I can come up with a free estimate? Go ahead. My neighbor said I can use the ladder behind his shed,
noted Helen.
Terrific. I'll have a report shortly, assured Tuli.
10 minutes later, Tuli was at Helen's back door.
What's the bad news?
Whined Helen.
The problem is what I suspected. Shall I get to it? Asked Tuli. Okay. The timing is perfect. It's supposed to rain tonight,
relayed Helen.
Excellent. I'll be back in a while. I'll also show up in the morning to make sure the pan on your mantle is dry, if that's okay,
asked Tuli.
That's fine, answered Helen.
The following morning, 13-year-old Key sprang from bed. While quickly dressing and washing, she had one thing on her mind. If her softball team won today's game, they'd be playing in the league championship game. Though prone to whiffing at the plate and flubbing in right field, being on the team was an important way for the awkward teen to connect to her peers. Because her mother managed the team, the slights and snickers that came her way were usually whispered, making it easier for her to overlook them. She was, simply put, grateful just to be a teammate. Soon aware of her mother's usual Saturday morning routine, sipping coffee and watching TV, wasn't underway in the kitchen, Key went to her mother's bedroom, where something she didn't expect was happening.
"Why have you put on a skirt and blouse?"
Key asked her mother.
"My boss asked me to color for someone sick. A part-time office worker like me increases her chances of getting hired full-time by helping out. Don't worry, Tuli agreed to take my place. I've given her the starting lineup, and I've told her to make sure to put you in right field during the last two innings."
"Who's Tuli?" fretted Key.
"She's doing some repairs for us. I was reluctant to try her out because your grandfather sent her over. She's renting a room from him. Anyway, she's already fixed the roof. If the team wins, I'll make sure I don't miss the championship matchup,"
assured the mother.
"But what about going out after the game?" asked Key. "I've called Mara's mother. She agreed to take you with them for post-game pizza. I'll pick you up at their house. Tuli knows about the plans. Grab some breakfast, then go out back and let her know you're ready. She's working on the outdoor faucet,"
said the mother before dashing from the house. After wolfing down a bowl of cereal, Key tucked her bangs under her ball cap, flung her glove under her arm, then headed out the rear door.
"I'm ready,"
she called out.
"Hi, okay,"
said Tuli as she locked her bike's bin. Brought to a halt by the sight of Tuli's trike, Key worried that the fill-in manager intended to ride the attention getter to the ballpark.
"Is that how you get around?"
she asked.
"Along with walking," answered Tuli. "The field isn't far. We can walk," assured Key.
"Lead the way," said Tuli. While heading down Gotch Road, Key couldn't stop wondering why an adult would ride a three-wheeler.
"Is your tricycle how you get around?"
"Yes. Everything I own fits in my backpack and the trike's bin," answered Tuli.
"Don't most repair people have a van or truck?" asked Key.
"That's true. I'm a hand tools only exception. Not using power tools keeps my load light. I understand why someone wouldn't want to be seen with a quirky adult on a trike," said Tuli, trying to get along.
Why not just get a van or truck? Press key. Most people don't see my answer to that question as satisfactory, said Tuli.
Unsure what Tuli meant, Key took offense.
Are you saying I'm probably not smart enough to understand your answer?
She asked.
No, I'm saying the few who've heard my answer find it silly,
shared Tuli. Wanting to make her regard for Key evident, Tuli recalled a fond memory.
When I was a child, my granddad read a story to me that impressed me greatly. Rather than oodles of laws, everyone in the story followed a wise saying that encouraged niceness. Like those in the story, I believe getting around in a way unlikely to do harm is one good way to be a nice person, noted Tuli.
That's screwy. People need more than a wise saying. They need a whole bunch of rules.
And they need ways to punish those who break the rules, insisted Key. Most people agree with you, assured Tuli. Just telling everyone to be nice is screwy,
again scoffed Key.
I suppose it's hard to imagine a world where being nice is what's most important. The good news is, every so often, I bump into someone nice, like your granddad, who thinks pedaling a trike is a good idea, said Tuli.
Mom says he's wacky, too wacky to make my dad do right by us, countered Key.
Your granddad seems sharp and caring to me, replied Tuli.
Uncomfortable with talking about her granddad, Key again opposed the use of tricycles by adults.
Why don't you at least get a bicycle?
She asked.
Soon after giving a two-wheeler a try, I had a close call with a fellow who stepped from behind a parked truck. Though no one was seriously hurt, the face-to-face look of fright just before our collision still gives me the chills, recalled Tuli.
The guy wasn't careful, pointed out Key.
And I was going too fast. We both fouled up, admitted Tuli.
You gotta keep living when bad stuff happens, said Key.
Yep. Just about everybody believes it's important to carry on as if things have to stay the way they are, replied Tuli.
Key smirked.
So, you don't use a van, truck, or bike because you're afraid you'll hurt someone.
Tuli stretched her neck from side to side.
I also don't use cars, buses, trains, and planes, she revealed. That's pretty weird. Plenty of people don't freak out after having worse stuff happen than your bicycle crash, pointed out Key. I guess I have a flair for trying to avoid hurtfulness, admitted Tuli. I'd say it's a flair for being a fraidy cat,
ribbed Key.
No doubt, that's true. But doesn't everybody deep down want niceness? Posed Tuli.
No, being nice isn't the big deal you think it is.
Doing what it takes to fit in is what counts, contended Key as they crossed the street and headed for the infield of the ballpark.
A softball game that had seesawed its way to a one-run lead for Key's team was about to end
in dramatic fashion. With the bases loaded and two outs in the last half of the final inning, Key, who was in right field, pounded the palm of her glove while watching the right-handed batter at home plate. "You won't be getting a chance to mess up, so just relax," she told herself after the batter swung wildly at a pitch in the dirt for strike two. Then the unexpected occurred. Though the next pitch was outside and low, the batter stretched over the plate, swung hard, and sent a long line drive to right field. Despite being startled, Key jerked to her left, realizing she was too slow to make a standing catch. She launched her entire body toward the whizzing ball. To her surprise, her extended glove hand snagged the ball as it hit the ground. All eyes watched as she rolled over, then sprung onto a knee, a position that left her facing the infield with the ball in her glove. Immediately turning toward home plate, the players, managers, and few dozen spectators watched as the heavyset imposing ump, Marge, signaled the batter was out. Key was ecstatic. For the first time in her uneventful life, she was the center of attention. Her astounding catch had catapulted her from derided bench warmer to admired game winner. After making her way to the infield, where she received pats, high fives, and hugs from teammates, Key approached Thule for more praise. "That was a fantastic catch, Key. Good job holding on to the ball," began Thule before hesitantly adding something she dreaded saying, something she knew would dismay Key. "I wish the ball hadn't skidded off the grass just before you scooped it." The end of part 1.